We will devote just about our entire state capitol report this hour to the legal action over the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign. And what all this means for campaign finance laws, for political speech, the race for governor, and more. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, May 12th. We will start with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, and we will hear from two guests from different political perspectives after 7:30. If you'd like to join in with questions and reactions, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
Before we start talking about John Doe, we just heard in state news that former Wisconsin Governor Pat Lucey passed away this weekend in Milwaukee. What is the legacy of Governor Lucey?
Well, I mean, he's a two-term governor. He served as ambassador to Mexico. He ran for vice president. And this past legislative session, Governor Lucey was in his 90s. It was known that his health was deteriorating for a while. And so you did have a moment this past session when some of the longstanding state senators stood up and paid tribute to him. And one of the things that a couple of them mentioned, Democratic Senator Tim Cullen, Republican Senator Mike Ellis, both of whom are retiring after this session, they mentioned that he had done more to leave his imprint on the state than any governor that they'd served under, or at least tied with any governor that they'd served under. And they referred specifically to his creation of the University of Wisconsin system as we know it today, where the campuses throughout the state are merged with the UW-Madison. That was just a huge deal in terms of leaving his imprint on the state. Also for Democrats, I mean, he was a two-term governor in the 70s. And so, I remember Governor Doyle, the night that he won his second term, immediately paid tribute to Pat Lucey. He's somebody that Democrats for generations kind of looked up to.
Well, we will have more on Pat Lucey's life and legacy on this show, maybe even tomorrow. I'm sure Central Time this afternoon will also have some news about that as well. But let's move on to John Doe 2. What is this case all about anyway? Sean, what was John Doe 2 all about?
John Doe 2. I mean, we learned more about what John Doe 2 is about. We learn more every time paperwork comes out, because a John Doe investigation is supposed to be a secret investigation. And while stuff gets leaked, stuff gets dug up, it really helps when you have paper in front of you and a judge kind of describing the case, at least how he views the case. So John Doe 2 is much different than John Doe 1, I guess, is the first thing you got to know. John Doe 1, if you want to call it that, the investigation that began right before Scott Walker won his election in 2010, involved activities surrounding the Milwaukee County Executive's Office when Scott Walker was governor. And the charges in that case, they kind of went all over the place. I mean, some of the most notable ones, we heard recently about the Kelly Ryan Fleisch case, because emails were released connected to that investigation, where she was charged with illegally campaigning on her public job. The other big charges in that case were against Tim Russell, longtime Governor Walker confidant, who was found guilty of embezzling money that was intended to go to veterans. There were other charges in that case as well.
So that was John Doe 1.
Right.
And that was when the governor was running for governor.
So, I mean, I imagine it feels like you've been hearing about John Doe for a mm-hmm. while, but you have to set that aside. And that was the one that was being talked about during the recall. John Doe 2 is a different animal. And their prosecutors are looking into, and they have not filed charges against anyone, but they're looking into whether there was illegal coordination between Governor Scott Walker's campaign and a variety of conservative groups during the recall. And, you know, if that might have been speculation a few months ago or something that was based on tips or anonymous leaks to the paper, but we have Judge Rudolph Randa describing the case basically in those terms in this decision that he issued last week. And so we know that that's what prosecutors are looking into.
All right. So why did this case end up in front of Judge Randa anyway?
Because, a John Doe is a state proceeding. I mean, the district attorney of Milwaukee and the other district attorneys and the special prosecutor that they appointed, they are all acting as agents of the state of Wisconsin. And what happened is they were investigating, one of the groups they were investigating was the Wisconsin Club for Growth. The Wisconsin Club for Growth decided, we're not just going to play defense on this. We are going to sue Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm and several of the others connected with this case. And so they filed a federal civil rights lawsuit, you know, put the case, brought it through a different lens, put it into federal court and said, you are violating our civil rights, our First Amendment rights. I think when they initially filed that case, people thought, well, maybe you're just bringing more paperwork for them or making them fight two legal fronts instead of just one. That is not how Judge Randa viewed it.
Yeah. So what did Judge Randa have to say about this?
I mean, Judge Randa said, Wisconsin Club for Growth, you are right that this is by the very investigation, by just the very fact that they're conducting an investigation, Judge Randa ruled that prosecutors in the John Doe had infringed upon the First Amendment rights of Wisconsin Club for Growth's treasurer, and that it made it hard for him to raise money to run issue ads, basically, because donors heard about this investigation, had heard about his being investigated, and they didn't want to send their money to Wisconsin Club for Growth. Judge Randa said, you know, essentially that it chilled speech, and a reasonably brief and very, I mean, abrupt, I'm not sure, a ruling last week. He shut John Doe down.
He said, stop it. He halted John Doe, too, with his ruling.
He did. And, mm-hmm. I mean, he gave us all sorts of hints about what's going on in the investigation and just the way that he viewed the investigation and the, its implications for campaign finance, for, you know, First Amendment law as it pertains to recent states or recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions, which he intertwined in his decision. There's just a lot of material there.
Well, so he said, I order that John Doe two be halted and that the evidence gathered so far be destroyed, right?
He did. Yeah. And that was Tuesday.
And then it was appealed.
Right. The thing is, prosecutors in the case who were defendants in this lawsuit, I mean, Club for Growth was suing them. So the prosecutors, you know, were the defendants in this case. They filed a notice of an intent to appeal a few weeks ago. And so procedurally, when somebody does that, when a defendant files a notice of appeal, a judge can't do what Judge Randa did. And so that's what the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago told him, said, you know, that under court rules, you can only issue an injunction the way that you did when there's a notice of appeal, if you find a case to be frivolous, if you find an appeal to be frivolous. So that was Wednesday.
And then Judge Randa said, okay, it was frivolous.
Exactly. On Thursday, he turned around a 6-7-page opinion, said, look, I thought I made myself clear. This is frivolous. And then in a footnote at the very end of his decision says, of course, everything that the appeals court said about not destroying evidence stands. And so that's where we stand today. that Judge Randa's most recent ruling was that the John Doe is closed, and but his ruling about destroying the evidence, that's not going to happen. The appeals court said you can't do that because if there's an appeal, that could moot the appeal. Their words, you know, that if there's merit to the appeal and you destroy the evidence, that could kind of destroy the merit of the appeal.
All right. Well, we're going to get into the reaction and analysis and implications of this legal wrangling in just a moment. And we welcome your questions about John Doe 2 and the legal proceedings surrounding it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine with Sean Johnson, WPR State Government Reporter. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sean Johnson on the latest on the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign. And Sean, how significant was this ruling by Judge Randa?
Well, I think it could be significant for a number of reasons. I mean, if his view survives appeals. I mean, and if this ruling stands or something close to it stands, once this is done with appeals, it would mark a major change in the way that we enforce campaign finance regulations, not only in Wisconsin, but potentially elsewhere. I mean, this federal decision could have implications if it works its way up the ladder. I mean, it quotes extensively from the recent Supreme Court cases you might have heard about, the McCutcheon decision, mm-hmm. which said, which struck down aggregate campaign finance limits. And by the way, the state of Wisconsin reached a settlement last week that said, okay, that applies to state candidates too. So aggregate campaign finance limits, meaning you can now give $10,000 to, which is the max, to a candidate for governor, and you could still give $1,000, which is the max, to a state senator, and so on. So it used to be that you had a $10,000 aggregate limit to all candidates.
Oh, so $10,000 total. Now it can be $10,000 per candidate.
Yeah, you still have to abide by each office. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there's just a lot happening right now in the world of campaign finance nationally and in Wisconsin. But kind of back to this case. I mean, it quotes extensively from McCutcheon. It quotes extensively from Citizens United. Those are both cases where the U.S. Supreme Court has weighed in on First Amendment free speech rights recently. And I mean, Judge Randa is basically saying that the laws that we have in Wisconsin that, prevent coordination between campaigns and issue advocacy groups like the Wisconsin Club for Growth, are laws that could serve to restrict First Amendment rights. And he's prepared to cast those aside, saying that, you know, the interest of free speech rights prevail here. Jeanine Geske, former state Supreme Court justice, current law professor at Marquette, says these could have big implications. So this ruling could have big implications for that.
Those cases are intertwined in Judge Randa's decision. I'm sure that the Seventh Circuit judges will look very closely at it. And it'll be interesting to watch because these are tough cases, particularly in light of the new Supreme Court cases.
And if you're looking for one telling line in the Randa ruling, he says, logic instructs that there is no room for a quid pro quo arrangement when the views of the candidates and the issue advocacy organizations coincide. So, you know, why do we have campaign finance laws? To prevent quid pro quo corruption.
You know, I'll give you money if you do this bill for me.
Right. Yeah. He's saying that's basically impossible because these issue groups, their views already align with the governor's or, you know, the Republican campaigns here. And so it's impossible for them to engage in that because they're already their views are aligned. They're not changing any.
Does anybody think that's a stretch?
Well, I mean, I think that's you'll be talking with Jay Heck mm-hmm. in a bit. I think, campaign finance groups certainly think it's a stretch. Mm-hmm. And, one thing we haven't pointed out yet is we don't have a criminal complaint to look at in this case, because this is an investigation that is that's ongoing. Another thing that's noteworthy in this case, on Thursday, Judge Randa called the appeal by prosecutors frivolous. That is not a term that judges throw around lightly. Again, here's Janine Geske.
A judge doesn't throw that term around lightly because, you know, most appeals are at least debatable. You know, some may be more difficult, but frivolous is really without any legal merit under any interpretation. And so it's pretty rare that a judge finds that something lawyers have done is frivolous. And, you know, Judge Randa obviously feels very strongly about this case.
Yeah, and it's also not very often that a federal judge shuts down a state investigation, right, Sean?
No, it's not. And that's a point that was made by UW law professor Ben Kempinen. Says he hasn't seen a case like this since he's been teaching in the 70s. And he says it's really, he views it as kind of a state's rights issue here. You have a federal judge getting involved preemptively in an investigation that's ongoing. Again, no charges have been filed in this case, and a judge is shutting it down. Kempinen says that's a big deal.
When DAs are involved in a John Doe, that they're acting as investigators. That is, they're not deciding to prosecute somebody, they're determining whether a crime occurred. And that's really not unlike what police do. And so the thing that I guess struck me as the most significant, apart from the merits of this individual case and, you know, sort of election laws, is we have one federal judge basically telling law enforcement, DAs acting as law enforcement, that you can't even investigate alleged criminal behavior.
Because we're running somewhat short of time here, Sean, there have been some complaints that, I guess, from the left, that that Judge Randa has a conflict of interest in this case. And what do we know about the judges?
Well, I mean, the conflict of interest, the potential conflict of interest that was highlighted last week is that someone working for Judge Randa is married to Stephen Biskupic. Stephen Biskupic is the lawyer for Friends of Scott Walker. Biskupic responded to that, said, first of all, I'm not participating in cases that are in Judge Randa's courtroom while my partner works there. And also, Friends of Scott Walker is not, while their interests obviously align with the Club for Growth, they're not bringing the case here. And so, you know, Biskupic says, I don't have a conflict of interest in this particular situation. We do know that Judge Randa, though, I think he's widely viewed as a conservative judge. And you look back at some of his rulings, they point to that. He was appointed by George H.W. Bush, President Bush the first. This is not the first time that he has, it's interesting, it's not the first time that he's had a high-profile case in Wisconsin go to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. One that I think is worth highlighting, you remember the Georgia Thompson case from way back in 2007? Georgia Thompson was a state employee who was found guilty by a jury. Actually, she was prosecuted by Stephen Biskupic at the time, who was a federal prosecutor. But Georgia Thompson was sentenced to prison at the time by Judge Randa for bid rigging, essentially, helping a donor of Governor Jim Doyle receive a state contract. Her case went to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and they returned it and said the evidence in the case was beyond thin, ordered her free from prison immediately. And there have been other high-profile cases where he's been reversed by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago, but that's one that immediately stood out.
Yeah, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, very briefly, two of the judges appointed by Republicans, one by a Democrat?
Yeah, and this is, I mean, you could have gotten a different selection of judges, okay, because they're not the only judges on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. But it is interesting, they got Judge Diane Wood, Judge William Bauer, and Judge Frank Easterbrook on this case. Who were the three judges that reversed Judge Randa back in the Georgia Thompson case? Yeah. Those three. So I suppose that happens more often than you know, the casual observers like us would notice, but it's certainly noteworthy that we have those three and Judge Randa united again.
Interesting, yeah. So how does this affect the race for governor in our final minute or so?
Well, I mean, obviously, if charges were to be filed, it would be a big deal. Even though Governor Walker survived a John Doe investigation really unscathed in his run for governor in the recall. I mean, that was an ongoing investigation. But you have to imagine, politically speaking, he thinks he'd be better off without this case or without charges being filed against his campaign. And I got to think Democrats would think the same thing. I mean, that's conventional wisdom, but sometimes it's right.
Yeah. And what is Governor Walker saying about this?
Governor Walker is saying very little. I mean, last week he said, I hope we can move on, but he wasn't ready to do a victory dance.
You know, on this, on Act 10 and everything else, I'm used to things being in the court quite a bit. So that's why I don't get too excited one way or the other. You all have commented about questions, whether this is vindication or not. I don't claim that one way or the other. I leave that up to other observers.
And he said that Wednesday, early Wednesday, and a couple hours later, the Court of Appeals reversed Judge Randa. So probably wise not to say we win at that point. I think this is going to be gone.
Yeah, 30 seconds. Mary Burke, are we saying anything?
She's been very quiet on the issue of John Doe. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has not been an issue where she's out making it her preeminent issue in the run for governor, and that continued. I mean, she's very quiet on it, given the weight of the charges.
Thank you very much, Sean. We will get more reaction from David Blaska and Jay Heck coming up after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.